So much of that depends on what your objectives are in the business. You know, if you've been in the same area for a long time, maybe customer satisfaction is a really important metric, because that's something that you've identified has a direct effect on the amount of time that you hold on to listings. And with the market shifting the way that it is, maybe it's more important to have higher customer satisfaction with your sellers, and relationships with sellers need to be managed more carefully because pricing expectations need to be adjusted if the market's not paying what the market's paying. For a small business, maybe it's simpler than that. Maybe it's how many listings I have. That's an interesting one. So is it how many listings I have, or is it how many listings am I selling of the listings I get?
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology, and more to help you list more, sell more, and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, Samantha McLean from Elite Agent. What do Facebook, Instagram, and Uber have in common? If your answer was a big focus on providing excellent customer service, then you'd be correct. But have you ever thought about how it is they actually identify which aspects of their service they need to focus on or modify to achieve the amazing growth that these companies have to date? My guest this week is Anton Babkov, the CEO of Rex Labs. Rex Labs are a team of entrepreneurs helping real estate businesses do a similar thing, developing ideas and creating platforms to help agents with customer relationship management and client service referrals needs, among other things. I sat down with Anton to get to the guts of a measurement tool called the North Star Metric, how it can really assist with business growth, and how you too can start growth hacking just like the Silicon Valley giants. Enjoy the podcast. So welcome to the podcast, Anton Babkov.
Great to be here.
You wrote a fairly interesting article for us a couple of weeks ago on North Star Metric. Everyone in the real estate industry is quite familiar with the term KPI, but North Star Metric is something that, it's a fairly new term because it's a term that some of the tech companies in Silicon Valley use a lot to describe where they're heading. So first of all, can you just explain it to me like I'm seven?
The idea of a North Star Metric comes from a lot of the thinking and writing that's happened in the tech space, specifically around growth. So growth is a really key part of obviously any tech startup. So it's really important for them to create a way or to use methodologies to set themselves up to make sure that they're growing in a rapid way, but also in a sustainable way. So the idea of the North Star metric is it's kind of this catch-all, but also a thinking point that allows an organization to kind of look to something, maybe one thing or maybe two things. And that one thing transparently focuses a company or a group of people on what they need to achieve. Now, what's interesting about the North Star metric is it's not just about, okay, hey, we're going to get X number of listings or we're going to get Y conversion. It's meant to be something that you come to after a fair amount of deliberation. And what it does is informs this one measurement, this one data point, when properly measured, informs a lot of the other business activities that you have in your business. So it highlights issues that you might need to focus on, and it gives you areas to see where you've improved on certain areas.
So North Star metric is one number, which is interesting. So it's just one thing really that you've kind of got to keep track of above all else. There's some great examples out there that you referred to, MySpace, Facebook, Uber. What would be a North Star metric, first of all, for Facebook? What do they measure themselves on?
Facebook's North Star metric is probably a function of frequency and the maturity of their business. When they started, they might have looked at, okay, how many total Facebook users do we have? Now, there's problems with that metric. If you count the total number of Facebook users, what you don't know is, are those users active? So maybe when they first started out, they would look at how many users are logging onto Facebook at least once a month. MAUs, monthly active users, that's a pretty common frame of reference or a common metric that's used by tech companies. As Facebook has evolved, obviously people are checking into it on mobile. They're spending a lot more time on it. So something like 50, 60% of screen time, I'm making that stat up, but like very, very high rates of screen time are spent on the internet, specifically using Facebook or the Facebook app or the Facebook group of apps. So WhatsApp, Instagram. So maybe they'd look at daily active users or time spent per day. those metrics would shift over time depending on what Facebook's objectives would be.
That's really interesting you say that, because we always hear the term that Facebook's got X billion users now and more users than, you know, a small country or something like that, they always say. But they're not measuring registered users because, for instance, MySpace has still got probably a ton of registered users, but nobody uses it. So just to summarize, what you're saying there is you've got to pick a metric which is actually about growth in your business.
That's correct. And it's one that's an honest metric. So one that probably exposes areas of weakness and areas of strength.
So if you pick the right North Star metric, how do you handle the rest of the KPIs in your business? So for example, let's look at Facebook. If their number of active users is continually increasing, then that probably means that there are people using apps and there are people doing the different things that you were talking about. Do you still have to keep track of the other numbers?
Yeah, absolutely. You need the other numbers because they inform when something goes wrong. When everything's going right, it's great. Except sometimes you don't know why it's going great. Let's say Facebook started losing daily active users. Let's say that was their North Star metric. They might look at app download rates. So are people still downloading their app at the same rate? Does it matter what size photos are shown or the volume of photos and imagery that appears on the stream? Other things they might look at business level is repeat usage from new users. What demographics are drifting away or coming back? So really kind of breaking down and thinking about those key metrics that make up the pyramid that builds into their North Star metric.
So with Rex, you've got a number of products out there that real estate agents use, which will track various KPIs for them, correct?
Yeah, so we have KPI tracking, absolutely, and particularly in our CRM product.
If I'm a real estate business, what do you think would be a good North Star metric for me to be tracking?
So much of that depends on what your objectives are in the business. You know, if you've been in the same area for a long time, maybe customer satisfaction is a really important metric because that's something that you've identified has a direct effect on the amount of time that you hold on to listings. And with the market shifting the way that it is, maybe it's more important to have higher customer satisfaction with your sellers, and relationships with sellers need to be managed more carefully because pricing expectations need to be adjusted if the market's not paying what the market's paying. For a small business, maybe it's simpler than that. Maybe it's how many listings I have. That's an interesting one. So is it how many listings I have, or is it how many listings am I selling of the listings I get? There's some interesting things there that North Star metrics don't necessarily have to be volume-based, so they don't have to be a number. We must sell 20 listings this month. They might be a ratio. The core idea of the North Star metric is that you set something that is like a health indicator. And if you can set a health indicator that's percentage-based, so let's say we will sell 75% of all of our listings. What's interesting about that is if you can hold that constant, all you need to do is feed more listings on the other side. But if you notice that as you feed more staff in and you feed more listings in, your sales rate drops, well, then you're kind of spinning in the same place. Those percentage or those ratio-based metrics can be really helpful. From a performance standpoint, it depends on what are the key factors that influence the way that your company grows. They're an honesty meter. If you set them right and if you think about them in your business every day, what you'll find is that as soon as things dip off, that's when you know, okay, what should we look at? Should we be looking at our customer satisfaction? Has someone else come in? Have the market dynamics changed? If the market dynamics have changed, what do we need to do in terms of convincing sellers to sell with us? Maybe the conversation needs to shift. The difficulty for most small businesses and real estate agents, a lot of real estate agents fall into that bracket, is that they look at things like cash flow. So how much cash am I going to have coming in? You know, how many commissions? What's our GCI written for this month? The problem with that figure is it's an after-the-fact figure. It shows you what's happened. It doesn't give you a warning and it doesn't give you any indication of what needs to happen on a go-forward basis. It just tells you that things are dropping off.
That's interesting, actually. So what you're saying is depending on what stage you're at in your business, your North Star metric might be different. So if you're in startup mode, it's obviously going to be listings or conversion of those listings. And if you've got a more mature business, it might be more about customer satisfaction.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it depends on what you really value in your business and what you think it is that helps you to grow.
I think the interesting thing there that you just touched on as well was the concept of the ratio, because often if you want to grow the business, your first inclination is to go and add more listings or try and get more listings in, get more stock in without thinking about the stock out equation. And that's something that we've kind of talked about a lot. So that conversion rate would be a really interesting one to track, I think, for a lot of businesses.
You know, it's quite fascinating what's going on in the market at the moment. There's a lot of focus on price drops and auction clearance rates. So listings are not selling at auction. Now, that doesn't mean that listings aren't selling at all. I was having this debate with someone yesterday. The volume shift in the market is, say, between 10 and 12% in the worst case. Now, 8 and 12% is material, but it's not the sky is falling. So what's interesting is that mentality of, okay, the market's terrible, I'm losing listings, I'm losing sales. Why? What is a measure that you can focus on around that?
What about property management?
Look, I can't profess to know as much about property management as we do about sales. What's always struck me about the property management industry is things that happen from the perspective of a tenant. If you think about a business as a holistic business, one of the key things that we think is probably not handled terribly well on the property management side is the tenancy relationships. And I think there's a tendency within the property management industry to view tenants as a commodity. The issue is that a lot of these tenants, particularly in higher grossing areas, are owners in other areas. And tenancy relationships are important as well. And also, you know, just from a pure customer satisfaction standpoint, higher levels of customer satisfaction mean lower levels of complaint and issues to deal with. In terms of pure financial metrics, I guess one of the key things that we know in our space is it's much cheaper to keep a client than it is to get a new one. It's much easier as well to pick up new clients from referral business than from new business acquisition. So one of the things that we focus on a lot is our Net Promoter Score. So we run a Net Promoter Score survey of our client base every quarter. We also get marginal feedback each day, each hour on the support that we're providing to our customers. That element of customer satisfaction is really important.
I think it would be really easy to make the argument too that if your tenants are happy, your owners are going to be happy. Like, it's a bit counterintuitive to think about putting tenants at the top, but if you've got happy tenants, then they're going to look after the property.
So we see on the sales side how much investment is put into the owner relationship. So when someone buys a house, you know, they get a gift basket, they get a lot of love, the agent turns up with a key. When a tenant moves in, what happens? And what's interesting is that, you know, like one of the products that we have is called Hitch. Hitch is about referral of services around the moving experience. So it's not only for buyers and sellers, you know, who need finance or who might need conveyance services, but it's for tenants, you know, who might need removalists, who might need connections. And I remember speaking to someone a few years ago, a lawyer that was reviewing our terms and conditions for this product. And he said, if you guys could get this to work, I would move every 3 months because, you know, that experience of shifting is one of the worst parts of being in a home. So I think there are small ways that agencies can act. So something like Hitch is really quick. You know, it takes 5 minutes to send off a bunch of referrals to connections, utilities, to trades if they're needed, removalists, all that sort of stuff. That's a 5-minute effort for maybe a relationship that might last 3 years.
So that's interesting, actually. So we've been talking a lot in the industry lately about adjacent revenue streams, in that if there's downward pressure on commissions and disruptors and things like that coming, that real estate agents could look towards adjacent revenue streams. So that actually falls into that category too. How does that work?
The main thing that we've seen with Hitch in particular is agents have very haphazard relationships with maybe some local people, maybe some national providers of services, some national conveyancing providers, for example. And by haphazard, I mean, you know, there's emails, there's spreadsheets that are maintained. You might make a referral and get paid 18 months later when someone remembers that the client actually signed the mortgage agreement or whatever. So as a consequence, what we find is that in most agencies, referral activity is incredibly low. It's incredibly low. So maybe 5% of all transaction throughput. There's a huge amount of opportunity being missed by real estate businesses. And I think to some extent, you know, they're cautious. They're cautious because it's a hard problem to solve. So there's a lot of moving parts to it. But also, it's seen as risky to be benefiting from referral fees when you're providing a referral to a third party. And one of the key things that we've done is made the disclosure of those referral fees really upfront and clear. People that are informed are in a good position to do well. The client benefits because they're getting a great service and potentially better treatment or a better rate, depending on what industry you're working on, than that client can obtain out somewhere else. The provider is getting a great source of business, so a great source of qualified business. And the referrer is able to, one, generate revenue, two, add value, add a significant amount of value and smoothness to the process of moving or buying or selling. It's massive, massive value adds. And I think, you know, talking about disruption, as much as it is about revenue, it's also about service.
So you've just come back from Inman and all sorts of other places. Just give us a bit of an overview of what you're seeing worldwide, any trends in real estate, any trends in real estate tech that you've noticed in your travels.
Probably, I mean, the most interesting trend in real estate tech is the industry or good players in the industry taking on the disruptive, you know, quote unquote disruptive techniques of the disruptors in the US. A tech company now has been around 5 or 6 years called Opendoor. And Opendoor for a number of years has run a product called an iBuyer product for so highly homogenized real estate markets, where they basically will charge a seller a fee to buy their property off them, maybe make some tweaks to it, and then sell it on. They buy the property at a discount to what the market would pay, and they charge a fee, a transaction fee. So they're basically an agent plus a property flipper or property developer. The iBuyer approach has been picked up by virtually every single major real estate brand in the US in the last 12 months.
I heard Keller Williams are looking at it. The Realogy brands are looking at it. Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
It's interesting. And what's happening is, okay, so we've got this disruptive approach. It might take up 5 to 8% of the market, 10% of the market in the next 5-10 years. Why fight the trend? Why not just take it on, make it a part of your service offering, and then go for that, or adopt the technology or adopt the technique?
Interesting what you were just saying then about some of the traditional real estate agencies taking on some of the disruptive models, because, I mean, in effect, it's almost like Uber. You know, when we look at the Uber app, every time we look at it, we make a decision between Uber X or Uber Black or Uber somewhere in the middle, or, you know, depending on where we're going and what we're doing. And you're never going to find within a market everyone's going to be an Uber Black. I mean, it's a really interesting space to watch over there, where they're actually giving consumers what they want depending on what sort of real estate demographic they happen to be in.
Yeah, it's incredible. In the tech industry, we look to the US and we look to examples from the UK and stuff. But there's a lot of homegrown activity going on. There's a lot of our clients are doing incredible things with events. They're doing incredible things with tech. They're hiring in-house developers. They're aggregating all of their tools to build a single view of a customer. It's incredible. It, you know, on the tech side, and also on the, you know, to your point, on the business positioning side, you know, so what kind of customer do they want to deal with? What kind of relationship do they want with them today versus, you know, 5 years, 10 years from now? How do you build those long-term relationships? Or are you purely transactional?
What's next for Rex?
Our product mix over the last 2 years has kind of evolved into the direction that we see the market shifting. We see agents being more sophisticated in terms of their business acquisition. We see them being more sophisticated in terms of the way that they advertise properties. That's what Spoke is about. Spoke's our social media and digital marketing tool. Siteloft, the online presence, so content production, long-term sort of relationship nurturing. Rex, which is the CRM piece, so the touch base with the client, building a longer-term relationship once someone is working with you over a longer period of time. The people that use Rex and Siteloft and now Spoke are starting to get benefits, sort of retargeting. So retargeting people that might have opened your emails or that might have visited your website. Retargeting is basically advertising that might remind you about a brand that you might have dealt with. And then on the flip side, you know, we talked about the service piece. So Hitch is a really important piece for us, we think. So it's kind of like the pipeline funnel. We think that there's a lot coming to integrate those things. We think single view of a customer is going to be a big deal, and not something that's just dealt with by larger organizations, something that smaller businesses can really leverage. So that's a big piece for us, that single view. Automation of tasks, workflows. So one of the biggest pieces of work that we've done for the UK has been a full-scale enterprise-grade workflow engine. So anything a user can do in the system can be programmatically done by the workflow engine. AI, so building in prediction. But you have to be careful with machine learning and AI in a customer context. There's a lot of things that aren't there yet and won't be there for a long, long time. But certainly machine learning impacts on valuation models is really interesting. So lowering the cost of producing really accurate appraisals and valuations of properties. And then on the flip side, based on all of that activity, so the, you know, the referral activity and the social media engagement and the digital ad engagement and the engagement with the correspondence you send out, starting to be able to predict who you should be working with, which clients you should be talking to. So grading your clients within your CRM.
So, Anton, this has been a fascinating discussion. If there was one thing that you want the guys to remember about setting a North Star metric and making sure that they're on the right path for the future, what would it be?
So have a really thorough think about the way that you do business. What's important to you as a business, what's important to your staff and important to your customers, and use that to set a benchmark. Then once you've set the benchmark, work out how your systems can feed into it, work out how you can educate your staff around it, and work out how you'll change if it doesn't shift in the direction that you need it to go.
Anton Babkov, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.